It's almost primary election day in Arizona, and a conversation with a local school principal. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. The primary election is Tuesday. In Yuma, the mayor and a council member are running for re-election. But there are some new voices that want to serve the community.
And so some of like the really hopeful work that I have is to bring both resources and opportunities for the farm workers that are feeding us every day.
And back to school is around the corner. We hear from the principal of Desert View Academy on teaching philosophies.
But you've got to find ways to engage them. If they're engaged in the context, they will have a buy-in to keep that learning moving forward.
Plus, we hear from a first-time voter overcoming her fear. Those stories coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. We are just days away from the Arizona primary election, with some races to watch around Yuma and La Paz counties. But first, what to do if you want to turn in your mail-in ballot, because it's too late to send it out. Early ballots may be returned at designated drop boxes throughout Yuma County or at any vote center until 7 p.m. on primary election day Tuesday. On Tuesday, polling places will be open from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. In Yuma, voters will choose a mayor and three city council members. Yuma Mayor Douglas Nichols is running for a fourth term. He says there is more to do for the city he loves.
The next 4 years is dedicated to planning the future. We've done a lot of great look-aheads with our fire department. The police department's doing that right now. We've done our roadways plan. We've done our parks and arts, trails and recreation plan. And now we need to get the rest of the department's looking forward 20 years, 30 years, and so that we can plan what the future looks like.
Mayor Nichols is being challenged by write-in candidate and political newcomer Carlos Adams.
I'm a little different in the sense that I come from a different time, different generation. I feel that Mr. Nichols, he's done a great job managing the city, but the city's not the same city it was when he came into office. When he came into office, Yuma was known for people that were retired, older people. Now in this new generation, if we look into today's year, the median here is mid-30s. So we're a whole new generation, a whole new mindset than what was working for the last 12 years.
As for the Yuma City Council, there are three open seats, one incumbent, two newcomers on the ballot, and two write-in candidates. Yuma Council Member Carol Smith is the only incumbent.
And my dad used to tell me all the time, you deserve to be at a table where decisions are being made. I still think there's a lot of public safety that we can address the growth of them. We are, which is fantastic to see we're headed in the right direction. So I would like to continue that work. I'd like to continue that advocacy. Housing, you know, affordable housing is an issue everywhere.
She's running on strengthening city services, including public safety. Ron Van Wy says why not vote for him.
I believe in making my decisions based off the information. And for instance, the spaceport. I'm still up in limbo on that because I have not gotten the information I need to make an informed decision. So and data centers, the same thing. If we get data centers here, it might be coming through a pipeline of natural gas. So instead of electricity, natural gas might be resourcing those. So
Henry Valenzuela has received criticism from some voters online.
I've identified myself as an outsider, and when you're an outsider coming in and trying to make real change and you're not afraid to tell the truth and be upfront with how you believe about the actual policies that you want to implement, you become a threat. And unfortunately, the establishment sees me as a threat, and some of these accusations are coming directly from the people that are in charge.
There are two write-in candidates for Yuma City Council. Priscilla Ruelas is a younger candidate and political newcomer.
79% of all farm workers in the entire state are based out of Yuma County. And so some of like the really hopeful work that I have is to bring both resources and opportunities for the farm workers that are feeding us every day, just not only here in Yuma, but all over the world.
Derek Egeberg says people deserve a better Yuma.
We need to manage every square foot of this city. How do we attract the right businesses in? How do we attract the right development in? But how do we also protect this amazing way of life like we talked about?
Visit KAWC.org for more local candidate interviews and a roundup of races for city councils in Somerton, San Luis, Parker, and Quartzsite. Plus, there's a competitive race in the Democratic primary for the Arizona House of Representatives in Legislative District 23, which includes part of Yuma County. This year, a lot of people are voting for the first time. Among them is a Latina immigrant in Yuma who has never used her right to vote. KAWC student reporter Sahe Barcenas shares her story.
During election season in Yuma, the voices of thousands of citizens are heard at the ballot box. But for a segment of the Latino community, taking that step is far from easy. I'm Sahe Barcenas from KAWC. For years, news surrounding immigration and law changes has created an invisible barrier, even for those who hold the legal right to vote. With the upcoming primary election scheduled for July 21st, many feel that deciding to vote is a crucial step toward finally building a political voice. The reality of this invisible barrier is clear in the life of a 53-year-old Yuma resident who has lived in the United States for over two decades. Despite having her legal documents, fear kept her in the shadows. This year, she will vote for the first time. To protect her identity, we will call her Raquel.
De verdad, tanto trabajar, tanto batallar para obtener mis papeles. Muchos años el miedo me paralizó. Por miedo no votaba, pero creo que este año sí me voy a armar de valor. Por mí, por mis hijos, quién sabe, en un futuro mis nietos. Yo sé que no va a ser la gran diferencia mi voto, pero en mí sí. Va a ser la primera vez que voy a votar y lo voy a hacer para un mejor futuro. También porque creo que los latinos tenemos una fuerza en común y que podemos alzar nuestra voz votando, que es la mejor manera de hacerlo.
She worked so hard and struggled so much just to get her documents in order. For many years, that fear completely stopped her. But she decided to change her mind this year, gathering her courage not just for herself, but for the generations that will follow her. The impulse to overcome that fear did not come from political campaigns, but from the most intimate core, the family. Her mother, an elderly woman living in Mexico, whom we will call Amelia, views her daughter's decision as an important way to stand tall.
Mi hija lleva ya varios años allá en Estados Unidos y sí me gustaría que ya votara por primera vez para que sepan que está allá y que ya tiene valor allá.
Amelia wishes for her to vote, so that people in the United States know she is there and recognize her value.
Yo soy mexicana, batallé mucho por mí y por mis hijos para que salieran adelante, pero me da gusto que mi hija haya podido ya tener sus papeles en regla, porque también batalló para estar allá. Y máximo que los latinos tenemos valor donde sea, sin importar nuestro idioma y costumbres.
As a Mexican mother who struggled to raise her own family and help them get ahead, she knows firsthand how hard it is to build a life in a new place. She emphasizes that the Latino community has immense value anywhere, regardless of language or habits. Now, with her mother's support, Raquel views voting as a major responsibility to her own history.
Después de 20 años que tengo viviendo yo aquí, he mirado tantas cosas, ha pasado tanto la comunidad latina. Hemos creído por muchos años que no teníamos voz ni voto, pero creo que llegó el momento de empezar a ejercer el poder que tenemos. Y uno de esos poderes es votar, y eso a lo largo podrá dar un buen fruto. Este año ahora sí voy a votar y empezar a crear conciencia tanto en mí como en mi familia de que debemos de empezar a votar en vez de estarnos quejando.
After 20 years, Raquel notes how much the Latino community has endured, often believing they had no voice.
She emphasizes that the time has come to exercise that power and create awareness within families,
instead of just complaining. In Yuma, where the border defines geography, a vote is more than a ballot. It is an act of presence and dignity. For KAWC, reporting from Yuma, I'm Sahei Bárcenas.
Coming up after the break, we hear from the principal of Desert View Academy on teaching philosophies. That's coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
Welcome back to Arizona Edition. I'm Cisco Stargazer. It's almost time for the new school year, and that means kids will be heading back into the classroom. But have you ever wondered how much really goes into learning? It may not be quite as simple as reciting your ABCs. So today, we want to share with you an interesting conversation we had with Desert View Academy Principal Annalisa Angulo back in February. For a little context, Arizona Schools Chief Tom Horn had visited Desert View to commend them for outperforming the state on the Arizona Academic Standards Assessment. After his visit, we sat down with Annalisa to learn more about the key to their success. We talked literacy, tech, and AI. Have a listen.
We regularly outperform the state average, and it's because we have what we call a DVA expectation, where we know that if you just grow a student 1 year, it's not going to close any gaps. So many students come in below grade level, but are tested at grade level. So how do you close that gap? We close that gap with scaffolding and strategies to support that child reading that text. Ultimately, that child's got to be exposed to grade level text. Let's talk about our fourth graders that come in that maybe is reading at a second grade level. The state gives them a fourth grade level text. So we expose them to that text and we give them strategies and we support them to meet that expectation. And we hopefully close those gaps for reading. Because the longer those gaps stay open, the wider they get. And so then if we look at education beyond elementary, junior high, high school, college, that text only gets more complex. So students need to rely on strategies. I often tell kids, I can't teach you every vocabulary word out there, but I can teach you how to understand them. I can teach you the strategies to get to the definition. I can teach you X, Y, and Z. And you use those strategies to help you understand unknown words. And that really is kind of life. I don't mean to get super philosophical. I'm so sorry. But it's that idea of you can always be a problem solver. By definition, you're a problem solver because you don't know the answer. So if I can help you get to that answer, that is the life skill that you need. That is the educational skill that you need. That is going to help you be successful.
Yeah. You know, I have wondered, like, when I hear about like students reading at grade levels far below, I have wondered, how do you get them to catch up? Because that sounds hard.
I think it's a partnership between three parties. One is the teacher, second is the parent, and third is the student. The student has to have buy-in. You get student buy-in by engaging in the student. I have told kids and parents and teachers, you are not entertainers, but you need to engage the student. Students come with a small attention span, whether it's their age or the time that we live in with technology. We do not need to do a song and dance for them. You do not have to always have movies and lights and dancing around. But you've got to find ways to engage them. If they're engaged in the context, they will have a buy-in to keep that learning moving forward. So there has to be that piece of the student, the piece of the teacher comes in mind. We can't just tell them, this is the word. I've said it, so now they know it. It doesn't work that way. They got to see the word. They got to say the word. They got to use the word. They got to create with the word. And if they don't know that, I got to tell them, how are they going to define that? How are they really going to get to that main idea, the supporting details of the text? We're going to utilize captions. We're going to utilize common words and phrases. We're going to chunk up this multi-paragraph text into smaller paragraphs. And we're going to define as we go. We're going to annotate on the side, whether that's in picture form or written form. We're going to have fluency reading to get familiar with that text until I become comfortable with it. And I'm going to listen to my peers read it with the inflection of my voice. And then teachers are going to do think alouds. When I read this, this is what I'm thinking about. And we're going to model it over and over again. And then finally, we're going to have the parent come involved. This is what we're doing. This is what the support that I need you to happen at school. I need you to read at home. I need you to highlight text in all its forms, in the restaurant, at the store, down the street, pamphlets that you get in the mail. Highlight that text. Make text real. Reading cannot just live in a classroom. Reading has to live outside of school. And I think when kids can start seeing that, they can see the importance of it, then that's where we close those gaps.
That is also making me wonder, what relationship do you guys have with your teaching philosophies here with technology?
It is a entity in our lives that is not going away. We've opened up the box and now we have to deal with it. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, but what I'm saying is, how can we utilize tech to support our education? There is a lot of great things in technology that teachers can use in the classroom. For example, they can reuse technology to create something that is 3D. So now I'm going to focus on area and perimeter, and I'm going to have them make a 3D shape, which is great. So I don't have to use paper and glue and scissors to create, you know, where you fold the side and you glue it, and now I'm making a 3D building. Yes, that's amazing. But I can take it to a higher level. And I can say, if you do the math on your paper, take that information, put it into this program, and see what you've created. You know, that creation doesn't happen unless you've done the paper and pencil work first. Now you can see the advantage of that. Technology can come through with, when we're talking about fluency, you can record someone speaking, then that can be given back to the student. They can hear what they are saying out loud. You can use iPads and iMovie in a safe way to create mini movies for a kid. So now, instead of maybe writing down the summary of a story, I want you to retell it. And I want you to retell it in a reporter's way, so that when a reporter's out there, they use your 5 W's. So we're utilizing these things, but our output, our creation piece is technology. Technology can't teach. Technology can support, but in some ways, it's that whole saying about a calculator. A calculator is only as smart as its user. Technology is only as smart as you are going to allow it to be. Going back to the example of that 3D shape, like, if you want this amazing building, you need to do the work and find the specs and all of them. How do you do that? Your teacher tells you how to do it, gives you the strategies, gives you the formula, has you practice it over and over again. So now it becomes to memory, and now you can create your city, not just a building. You can use science to simulate technology to simulate science experiments. You can't go to the moon. We can't go to China, but I can use a virtual tour and I can get you down there. And all those things that I'm talking about becomes real. And I can use sensory components. I can turn off the lights and I can put on water music as you're exploring Mariana's Trench. So I can try to create it as best I can, and I can only do that through technology. So there's really great things about technology, but it cannot be your main component. It is not a co-teacher. It is not a co-teacher. Nothing can replace a teacher. In my mind, they are integral, because students are not paper and pencil. Students are 360. When I would do my parent conferences, I would talk about the data on the piece of paper, and then I would talk about the student as an individual. I would talk about their behavior, their emotions. AI cannot read emotions. They only get what you tell them. Teachers pick up those subtleties of having a bad day. Teachers pick up the subtleties of what a student will work for. Teachers will pick up those subtleties of what's happening at home is now affecting the classroom. Teachers pick that up. They are there to support that child, because she's passed away, but Rita Wilson, if you ever look her up, she's a great educator. She says kids don't learn from people they don't like. It's a very simplistic statement, but it's true. And it's not mean that we're the kid's best friend. It means that teachers see the kids for who they are. They have that mutual respect. I love you so much that I'm going to move that expectation bar a little up as you grow. And it's not tough love. It is, I'm helping you grow. I'm challenging you. And AI and technology can't do that. They can't record something and then tell you what to do with those kids. Because rarely are kids a recipe. Add this, mix this, bake it, and they're done. No way. So kids are living, breathing humans. And I know that's a duh statement. But you need living, breathing humans to teach them, to see them for who they are. So
You did mention AI. Is that like a whole concern? Like, you guys as educators here, I mean, how much does it affect you all today? Are you seeing a lot from AI, or is it still maybe not too much to worry about?
You know, that's an interesting point, because AI is fairly new. And when we look at the realm of elementary as compared to junior high, compared to high school to college, the majority of people who are using AI in an elementary setting on this campus is going to be our teachers. But we use it to refine our lesson plans. So in that sense, it's great. In that sense, it brings about strategies that you might not know about and or forgotten. 18 years in the classroom, things that worked a couple of years ago, I might have forgotten. And so when I put in my lesson plan into AI and I talk about depth of knowledge questions, 1 through 4, 4 being the highest, and I'll say, and create examples of depth of knowledge 4 questions, and it gives me those questions, those samples. Yes, that's great. When we're teaching, we have to review so many subjects and talk about reteaching in one, assessing in another, independent learning in one, group teaching in another. And so as teachers, we're juggling a lot of balls over and over again. So if I can use AI to either give me a third hand in the juggling or take away some of those balls that I have to juggle, then yes, great. That's what I want to use AI for. I want it to be my assistant. I don't want it to be my lead. So it's going to create that lesson plan for me. It's going to cut time in pulling a video out of YouTube that focuses on photosynthesis at a second grade level and has questions at the end. It will do that work for me. Very similar to the calculator. It won't do what I don't say. And the more specific I can be, the more helpful it can be. And I'm going to use that 100%. So in that sense, I think AI is great because it's just a tool. It doesn't lead my classroom. I would imagine that in college that you're looking at a hindrance with the AI, because now people can just say, create a paper that talks about the Civil War, the importance of Abraham Lincoln, and the juxtaposition of slavery impacting the economy with the moral aspect of it. And it will give you something great. And although I think those students can relate to those points, unless you're writing it by hand, how much do you really know it? But I'm not a college professor. I get to teach 11 and below.
Well, you're still an educator, though.
Yeah.
Do you ever get reports of, like, the kids here using AI for their homework? Or I don't know if that's something that's been a problem.
No, I'm going to say no. I don't know what the future will hold, but we do a pretty good job of filtering our technology on campus. And if there is ever a hole because a student was able to get to YouTube, we close it up right away. But we're not a one-to-one school, so technology is not a go-to for teachers. It is not, I have a headache, everybody get on a device. It's Friday for everybody. We're testing. It's not like that. So I don't see that yet, nor will I believe that it will happen at Desert View. So I'll speak specifically about the school that I love. Our educators here know their value, and so that's what they put all their energy in. They don't put energy into the assessments. However, to be a good educator, you have to prepare these students for the future. And most assessments are taken online. So we can't ignore that fact. When I was going to school, online classes were just starting to happen. I specifically remember being in a classroom in Flagstaff where there was one student who took out her laptop and started typing her notes. She was the only one making noise because everybody else had a paper pencil. So that tapping on the keys was quite odd. It wasn't common. It wasn't familiar. Now, that's the norm. My daughter now takes notes by recording the lecture in high school, then takes that recording, makes it into a podcast, and listens to that over and over again. She's getting A, so okay, I'm with it. Like, but for me, that wouldn't work because I have foundations with writing. I have my foundations. And so elementary has to build those foundations.
KAWC's Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to azed@kawc.org. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. Past shows and podcast information is available online. Just visit kawc.org for more information, or search Arizona Edition wherever you get your podcasts. You can also take KAWC with you wherever you go. Just download the KAWC COFA app, and the listening is in your hands. I'm Victor Calderon. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. Thanks for listening.